Mother. Wife.
Air Force veteran.
Gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
You're live and direct with Stacy on the Right. This is the place to be in the evening. Thank you for being with us. 866-957-2874 if you'd like to join the show. Right now, welcoming in one of my favorite guests, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, retired spokesperson for the National Police Association. Website is nationalpolice.org. Sergeant Betsy, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Stacy. Love being with you.
I'm glad you're here. So let's talk about this is a new law requiring the NYPD to gather the race and genders of the citizens. What?
Yes, race, age, and gender. And this actually started back in December. It's called the How Many Stops Act. And it was championed, of course, by most of the Democrats on the council, although two of the Democrats voted against it, but by a guy by the name of Jumaane Williams, who, if some folks might remember, that he was the defund the police candidate for governor in New York State a few years ago. And he sits on the city council. And by the way, lives in a on an army base there, heavily guarded by armed personnel, even though he doesn't want anybody else to be armed. But he championed this bill that says that NYPD, when they stop anyone for any reason, not just like a stop, question, and frisk type of investigative stop, any kind of stop, they've got to get the race, age, and gender and report that information. It has to be written down and reported. We had something similar to this in Illinois when we had a senator named Barack Obama, who this was one of the two similar laws that he passed in Illinois. And basically it was used to punish police departments who politicians thought were being quote-unquote racist or stopping too many people in one neighborhood or whatever. So what's going to happen is the NYPD officers assigned to neighborhoods where there's a large number of people of color and there's high crime in that neighborhood and they're stopping people, they're going to be called racist. It's also going to take time to gather this information. And Stacey, God forbid, what happens if you misgender somebody? What happens if you say this gentleman was a male Hispanic and it's actually a female Hispanic or vice versa? So this is fraught with problems for the NYPD, who's already so many officers, hundreds of officers short, and crime's not going down in New York.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you know, just sitting up thinking of all the things that police officers need to do. Police officers don't even pull over anymore if you have car trouble and you're blocking an intersection. They don't even pull over for that. We were out here in one of the suburbs near where we live, and I had a chassis destabilization error on my fancy car, and I could not pull through the intersection. Now, I was at the light, the first person at the light, meaning there was no one ahead of me. My car was not in the middle of the intersection, so my daughter started waving people around. I turned on my hazards, and I dialed AAA to get someone to come out and tow me. Called my husband, and he came out, and we pushed the car out of the intersection. A couple of Good Samaritans pulled over, but three police cars pulled by and did not stop to direct traffic or assist us at all. Now, this is in the suburbs. Obviously, we don't have as much of a manning issue as the NYPD. But I was sitting there thinking, you know, do I have to yell, hey, it's me, you guys' best friend? I mean, I totally support you guys. Could you help us direct traffic over here around my car? And I thought about reaching out to the department to find out, like, what the hell? But then I thought about it. What do I talk to you about on the show every time you're here? It's staffing. They don't have the manning. Now, this is on July the 4th, mind you. So, you know, not a lot of crime on July the 4th. The criminals even stay home with their moms and eat barbecue. But the point is that they have changed their approach to policing to accommodate the fact that there are fewer of them and everything is impacted. So this would be on the list of things that they would not want to add to their duties. I would say this is probably job one, taking the time to record the ethnicity of people instead of just writing down their driver's licenses. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, and what what we had to do in Illinois was, you know, no matter what we were speaking with someone about, you know, hey, have you seen this lost dog or whatever, we had to record all that information. And you know, so this is somewhat similar in New York. Now, this is only when the officer initiates the stop, if you will. But even just if an officer walks up to someone and says, hey, you know, we're looking for this missing child, or have you seen this, or what do you know about this? They've got to get all this information. We always hear from, you know, the anti-police side that, you know, oh, people are afraid to report things to the police. They don't want to interact with the police. Now, every time in New York, when a police officer is talking with someone, they're going to say, hey, listen, pal, hold on a minute. I need to know your full name, date of birth, your race, and your gender. And I need to put it all on this form so I can put it in a computer. Again, this at a time when a lot of big city mayors, like Brandon Johnson in Chicago, want to get rid of any databases, you know, like the gang database that he considers racist. So this information isn't going to be used by the, you know, the city council. It's going to be, they don't want it to use it for investigative purposes. They don't want it to help people stay safe in New York. They want it because they want to be able to look at individual officers or individual precincts, you know, and be able to say, you know, you guys are racist. You're stopping too many of this type of person, that type of person. And you know what they're going to end up with because of this? You're going to end up with even less proactive policing than you already have in New York.
Well, and I would imagine that the cooperation among citizens is not going to be as good because, like you said, they sometimes stop and talk to people. If they have to collect the name and information of every single person, a lot of people feel much more comfortable talking to the police if they're not having their information collected, right? They might have something they want to share that's going on in the neighborhood. They don't want you clocking them in. And, you know, it's often in a lot of these neighborhoods, it's very unpopular to talk to the police. So every time you talk to them, they have to get out something and record your information on a phone or on a tablet or something. That's just, everything about this stinks.
Well, and it makes people nervous. You know, again, people don't want the police writing down information for them, you know, right or wrong. You know, chances are, you know, the officers aren't going to use it for anything. But again, at a time when we want people to be comfortable with the police, you know, this just seems so counterintuitive. And again, you know, everything woke, you know, ends badly. So I know there's, you know, I have no doubt within 6 months, we're going to hear some crazy story about some poor cop who was talking to somebody who misgendered someone. And now, you know, we're going to have to punish that police officer. Also, everybody needs to understand, too, that these officers are wearing body cameras. So all of this is already recorded on their body-worn camera. So, again, it seems almost like the city council wants to just kind of slow the police down. And that's exactly what Eric Adams said, that this is going to slow cops down from doing their job. A lot of the city council members in New York are not big fans of the NYPD. And is their intention.
Well, okay, yeah, let's go with that, because, you know, let's keep it simple and you know, call a spade, what looks the most obvious and the most reasonable analysis of what they're doing, then we'll just go ahead and go with that until we are informed otherwise. But was Mayor Adams saying this is going to slow cops down? Was he saying that as someone, because he used to work with the police, was he giving this assessment as a negative, or was he kind of like, yeah, it'll slow them down, you know, where does he fall on this?
He actually fell on the side of reason and logic. And in fact, he originally vetoed this back in December. because he said this is just unnecessary. Again, it's always the big controversy in NYPD is stop and frisk, right? Stop, identify, and frisk. And police officers, when they do a formal stop and frisk, an investigative stop, pedestrian stop, they already have to record that, and they also have to make sure that their body cameras are on. They already have procedures in place. So what Adams originally said late last year was, yeah, this is a bad thing. This is going to slow down cops. It's going to make them less productive. And why? Why do we need this information? And the racial justice arm of the city council, again, led by Mr. Williams, were the ones who said, we need this because we need to see if in one area or another area the NYPD is doing bad things.
Yeah, but we know they're barely able to get anything done as it is. I mean, they have so much crime there that is due in part to the huge influx of illegal aliens that are there. And then, of course, the opportunistic crimes that occur because there are fewer officers. So, I'm just wondering why the rank and file don't just say, no, we won't comply with this. Where's the union? The police officers used to have a union that could kind of stand up to these kinds of dumb ideas.
Yeah, both the there's a Sergeant's Benevolent Association and then the officers union. And both organizations have said this is ridiculous. We just don't have time for this. Again, these cops are running call to call to call. They're especially the night shift officers are getting to work with 20 or 30 level 3 and above calls holding. So all this is going to do is really keep them from talking to people, keep them from talking, especially people on foot. Again, that whole stop, identify, and frisk. And it's as though, I know we keep being told crime's going down, but it's not going down. It's going up. Mm. And this is just going to be one more thing in New York City that is going to hamstring their police department. And this will continue until crime reaches the level that people are tired of it, or they start to replace their city council members with people who care more about crime and crime victims than racial justice.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in the power of a community that works together. The police officers need to know that the city council doesn't just exist to make their lives harder. And I think the city council members, if they ever needed to dial 911, they would hope that someone would show up within a reasonable amount of time. And what they're doing is they're guaranteeing that people who live in neighborhoods that aren't as nice as the ones that the city council lives in, that when they dial 911, it's going to take a long time for someone to respond, because they're going to be somewhere writing someone's name down and trying to figure out what that person from a list of 87 genders. Now, does one of these describe your gender? Would you like to take a look at my list? Can you imagine how long that portion of the interview will take?
I have thought long and hard about that since this came out, and I just thought, how far is that going to go? And then are we going to get into the pronouns? And are we going to, because it gets silly after a while. And yet that's another way for, activist groups to attack law enforcement. Listen, the biggest department-wide training the Minneapolis Police Department had right before the death of George Floyd was proper pronoun training. So this just absolutely gets ridiculous, and it doesn't keep anyone safe. Law enforcement has come a long way in, the way that we treat people and our compassion toward, quote-unquote marginalized groups, and how we treat the LGBTQ community has evolved over the last 40 years. So are we going to punish them for these minuscule, you know, non-existent violations by using something like the How Many Stops Act? You know, I don't know. But again, this is a department that can't keep cops and can't recruit cops. Every NYPD cop that I know is either retiring or going to Florida or Texas. Eventually, they're all going to leave.
And then who will they have left? Illegals. That's how they'll have to do the same thing Illinois is doing. Illinois is bringing in the illegals to be the police.
The DACA kids. Yep. And that's, you know, they can't carry guns, can't own a gun. The DACA kid, the DACA young people, the young police officers, which the LAPD has already hired. They've got a couple of classes of those. We're going to eventually have blue cities with non-citizens policing, arresting, detaining citizens of this country, and it's going to be a mess.
Well, they're going to be no-go zones because citizens won't go to places where a non-citizen can arrest them. They just won't go there. You know, I mean, just think about it. People already hesitate to go to Chicago because of the crime. There are mm-hmm. different conferences that don't, you know, they don't host their conferences in Chicago. And so it's not as widespread. But just think about it when you're getting ready to host a huge event for hundreds of members of an industry and, you know, that you start to throw out ideas on the little committee and you immediately, okay, well, no, not taking our huge membership there. It's not safe, right? You just think about the last time you heard somebody say they were hosting a conference in Seattle, Washington. That just doesn't happen. And Seattle is a fantastic city. It's beautiful, but it's crime riddled. The people are moving out of there in droves. Chicago does not yet have that problem where they can't get, you know, huge conferences to come in. But once the DACA, you know, kind of non-citizen police force is settled in and people begin to see how that works, they will have that problem. So these are the consequences of their actions.
Well, and I think you're going to see litigation once the first time that a DACA recipient police officer uses deadly force, I think we're going to have incredible litigation on that. Remember, the Supreme Court a few weeks ago just made a decision. It was about bump stocks, but in that decision, they talk about how federal agencies, in that case the ATF, can't make law. And yet it is the ATF that has told the LAPD and then and presumably Chicago PD that, hey, your DACA recipient police officers, we'll let them go ahead and carry guns even though it's against federal law. When one of those people uses one of those firearms, then we're going to have, I believe, multiple litigations on various levels, you know, state, federal, civil, potentially criminal, and it's going to be a mess. They're absolutely making a mess of what's the best system in the world for criminal justice and civil justice. And by bringing in people who are non-citizens to be police officers, the waters are getting incredibly murky. And it's going to be difficult for these cities to navigate legally.
So you don't want it, but you have to know that it's coming, and when it comes, it is going to be there are going to be some pretty vicious backlashes to all of this. I hope to goodness sakes that there aren't any deadly force cases, but it could happen. It definitely could happen. I mean, that's why police officers have firearms, because they're placed in situations where their lives are in danger. I know that so they're not just taking them off the street. They're going through police academy. They're learning. But they lack the one thing that our current crop of police officers, they don't have to worry about, which is their status is not in question. They don't see other Americans as being different from themselves.
And that's exactly it. Remember, every police officer takes an oath to the Constitution of their state and of the to the United States. And again, I'm not saying DACA, you know, these DACA recipients that want to be police officers. I'm sure a lot of them, most of them, are very fine individuals. But, you know, I can't go down to Mexico or up to Canada and become a police officer there. And I certainly, as an American, would not want to take an oath to their, you know, government, the way that they do government. I'm an American. I believe in the United States Constitution. So when we talk about constitutionality, and that is the absolute bedrock of our entire criminal justice system, how committed to all of that are DACA recipients going to be? And quite frankly, I think it's a real disservice to put those young people in that position in the first place.
Yep. And, you know, if they weren't young people, you would see them saying, nope, I'm not doing this, because this is an offer that's fraught with, you know, my future. If they get into a situation where they hurt or maim someone and then they are sued and the case goes up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court finds they never had the right to lawfully carry a firearm, that's felonious possession of a firearm. That's a federal offense that carries jail time. So, you know, would I advise a person to basically take their own future into their hands for the opportunity to be a police officer? As much as I respect law enforcement, I would say no, don't place your life on the chopping block on the possibility of being in federal prison. Or worse, you're here in the country, you don't have legal status, but at least you have been given kind of a partial, you're like halfway there because of the executive order by Barack Obama and the Supreme Court ruling. Now you're putting yourself in a position where you use a firearm, you're an illegal possessor, now you've committed a felony, your half status is revoked, and now you're subject to deportation. You don't know who the president will be at that time. You're here on a wing and a prayer as it is. Now you're going to be here or not here, instantly deported, where you were in a class of people who was kind of protected. It's crazy.
It really is. These young people who, you know, who want to serve, you know, I think the best way for them to do that as they try and get their legal status is to go through the program that the military has, which has been, you know, it's very tried and true how you can earn your citizenship as a DACA recipient through the American military. Law enforcement is very, as you know, very different from the military, and I really believe they're doing these young people a disservice. And I don't, again, as a citizen, I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to get arrested at all, because I probably wouldn't have this job anymore. But I don't want to be arrested by a non-citizen. I think that's absolutely, it's insane.
Yeah. I'm not down for getting arrested by someone who's not a citizen of this country. So, yeah. I'm a person who I believe in everybody having an opportunity, you know? I don't believe in this.
No. I mean, when you verbally game it out like you just did, it you know, do you think that someone, you know, in a position of authority gamed it out in the exact same way that you did and came to that exact same conclusion that, gosh, this is a terrible idea? I don't think so. And I think that's unfortunate. We are electing people who are in positions or are putting people in positions to make really stupid decisions, especially when it comes to our criminal justice system. We have just turned our whole justice system on its ear. You know, again, this all goes back to 4 years ago and then some. Why don't we have enough cops? because we've told the cops that you're bad and you're racist and we don't want you and we don't need you, we're going to defund you. So maybe address that issue rather than bring in DACA recipients and say, hey, why don't you kids become cops and we'll work on your status eventually.
Right. Why don't you take this job that we've demonized that everybody hates? Why don't you take this job and put your own lives on the line? Also, how about you do it and the people who you're policing won't respect you? They already don't respect cops, but when they realize you're a DACA recipient, that you're not even illegal, you're not even in the country legally, then you might even experience some backlash from that, you know, because that sounds like a lot of fun, getting challenged at traffic stops, which already happens with regular police officers. Like, they get challenged, why are you pulling me over? Why do you think I'm the whole sovereign citizen. I'm a sovereign citizen. You don't have the right to tell me I don't have a driver's license and I don't need one. I don't need identification. And they're dealing with these lunatics. And then imagine you get pulled over and you look at the person and say, well, are you even here lawfully? Like, how are you pulling me over? And the person says, I'm a police officer. And then they got to deal with all your drama because you're like, well, I don't believe you're a police officer. I mean, I don't know anybody. Why would anybody subject themselves to that?
It is extraordinary. Because it's a difficult job for someone who's a citizen. So, you know, I'm afraid that's what we're going to see. We're going to see these kids get discouraged. We're going to see them. And I wonder how committed they are going to be to police the streets of the country that they have not bothered to obtain legal status in. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm here to say, no offense, but the whole idea with a police officer is when if I get pulled over or if I dial 911, if I'm dealing with a police officer, in my mind, it's someone who has not broken the law. They are at least, at very minimum, not a felon, not currently under the supervision of any correction facility. They're not, they're not under a remediation program or a diversion program. They're not under any of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're in law enforcement. They're there to enforce the law. So at minimum, if I've been speeding or my tags are out of date or I have a broken headlight, when they pull me over, they have that over me because their tags are not out of date. Their headlight's not broken. They don't have anything going on, and I do. And so they, therefore, the uniform plus I've done something wrong, they're going to now give me a ticket or tell me I need to show up in court or fix my taillight and show up and prove it and, blah, blah, blah. I got to get over to the traffic law center and turn my ticket in so I can get it pled down to a non-moving violation and pay a fine, whatever. You can tell I've been through this. At minimum, that person is not a criminal. And when I look them in the eye, I need to see the cool stare of an individual that knows that I have possibly done something wrong and they have not. That's the energy I'm needing. I'm not needing someone when I roll my window down, I look in their eyes and I see them looking a little shifty because I am a citizen and they are not. No, that will not work for me. I don't know what they're doing.
This is just fraught with ways to go very, very wrong. And we're not particularly behind this. We're watching it to see how it goes. And, again, we've got four or five cities that are doing this, all cities who can't keep their cops. And it's going to be fascinating to watch. And then if we have a shift in administration, a shift in the federal government, it's going to get even more interesting.
Well, continuing to game out for just one second here, if I may, you change presidential administrations and you get a lawsuit that goes all the way up to the Supreme Court that nullifies all this stuff. And you have all these young people who are either in police academy right now or who have been through police academy. They've spent all those months training, learning. They've come out. They're in the uniform. They're rookies. They're out in the police force. their bodies are upping the count of officers. Some of the officers who are working are, you know, experiencing less strain from doing double shifts or, you know, having to come in, not having enough officers on the ground, you know, to respond, to assist them. And then you have these people pulled off the job. So, I mean, this really is a problem that they're of their own making in these municipalities that are doing this.
Well, truly, we have some states, like here in Arizona, we're trying to get a law passed, and there's this laws in other states where local law enforcement can stop someone who is here illegally, even though the federal government will not. Think about that. Can you have a police officer who's an illegal stopping an illegal who's here illegally? It starts to get almost cartoonish, and I don't think our justice system is ready for that. You know, people don't think in making these decisions, you know, past, you know, 6 months or the next city council meeting or what it is, whatever. But if you have a DACA recipient police officer who theoretically in 5 years of, you know, even in 10 years could still be an illegal and still be a police officer, what if laws change and, you know, we finally get our rights back to be able to stop and detain people who are here unlawfully, who are here illegally, then what?
So, yeah, there's nothing about what you've shared there that makes any sense to me at all. And the more we talk about it, the worse it gets. And I know that we deserve better than this. That's the thing. All of us deserve better than this. Even the DACA recipients deserve better than having their time and energy wasted. You know, I don't believe they have a right to be here, but I also don't think that they should be abused by being offered positions that they cannot lawfully hold because they are not in the country legally. And they're willing to do it because they think, well, if I put my life on the line, this might be enough for people to think, you know, I deserve to be here. And I could understand that sentiment, but it's not right. There is no country on earth where people who are in the country illegally, lawbreakers, can actually exert law enforcement capacity over citizens. We'd be the first place to get that done. And I know we like to trailblaze, but I'm just not willing to trailblaze there. It's crazy. So one more quick thing here. You have this story that you're bringing to us about 400 migrants who were smuggled into the U.S. by ISIS?
Yeah, ISIS and ISIS-K are in the human trafficking business now, and that should not be a shock to anyone because the Mexican cartels, you know, operate in multiple different countries, and what they've done is they basically contract out their human smuggling. So what we have is there's a group of migrants, about 400 of them, from places like Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Moldova, Georgia, even Russia, and many of them are here, even though Secretary Mayorkas denies it. Many of them are here. They are loose in the population. Some have been detained, but many, many have not been detained. They call them subjects of concern. And Mayorkas says, we don't know that they're terrorists. It's basically, he said it here in Tucson, Arizona, about a week and a half ago. And that we've arrested 150 of them, but they haven't all been detained. We have records of none of them being deported. And we're just sort of told to, don't worry about it because they haven't done anything yet. So we don't know that they're going to, even though Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, now runs up to Capitol Hill about every other month now and testifies that, you know, the red lights are flashing and this and that, terror attacks are imminent. But no, Secretary Mayorkas says nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. They're just some guys that are here, as migrants.
Oh, so just another thing not to be concerned about. No big deal. Yeah. No
Now, Russia thinks it's a big deal because Russia's already had an ISIS-K terror attack by similar folks. So that's why our FBI is now looking at it, because this happened in Russia. And so, like, well, maybe it could happen here. But again, you know, with the millions and millions and millions of illegal immigrants in this country, even our own federal government can't get their story straight. And just kind of wants people to put their head in the sand.
Hmm. Fabulous. Well, you know, here I am. Just you know, not being concerned, I guess. But that's all of us Americans, just sitting up here, not being concerned a little bit more. It's always such a pleasure to have you here. And anything else you'd like to add, anything you'd like to share with us, it's our pleasure to have you here to support law enforcement and to support National Police Association, which is nationalpolice.org. Please, anything else you have for us?
Stacey, we love being with you guys. And we ask people, just go to the website, go to nationalpolice.org, see what we're doing. We just had a great victory in the Maryland Supreme Court. Helping you know, police officers retain their qualified immunity, and we've got a great team of writers, but we need help. We need those donations to keep doing what we're doing, and it is a great organization, nationalpolice.org.
I agree wholeheartedly, and you can support Betsy's work by going there. She's Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith. She had a long career on active police work, and now she works to support and protect police officers as they discharge their duties to protect and serve. The website's nationalpolice.org. They have it easy for you. It's a couple of clicks, and you can donate and be in and out of there. Show your support for this great organization. Sergeant Betsy, great to talk to you. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Stacey. It was a great conversation. It's fun to be with you.
It's fun to be with you, too. All right, we'll talk again soon. That's Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, nationalpolice.org. We'll be right back with more Stacey on the Right. Stay right there.